He was a colleague and sometimes a challenger of the great Isaac Newton. After the great fire of 1666, he helped the famous architect Christopher Wren rebuild London. But unlike his famous contemporaries, Robert Hooke is almost forgotten by history. Author Stephen Inwood retraces Hooke's life and influence in his new book, The Forgotten Genius, and he joins us now by telephone from his home in Richmond, which is near London in England. And thanks very much for being with us on Talk of the Nation.
It's a real pleasure, Neil.
Your book opens with a description of the contents of Hooke's room at the time of his death, a snapshot of his life, really. Tell us, what were in his rooms there in London?
Well, it was the sort of clutter that he'd assembled. He lived in the same rooms for 40 years, and in it were, his cups and plates and clothes and cloth. He had lots of cloth. He made his own clothes quite a lot of the time. There was a draughts board, that is a checkerboard. There were harpsichords, lots of prints and pictures. There was a picture of a naked woman, too, apparently. There was lots of scrap metal and compasses and magnets and all the sort of things that a scientist would need. Globes, telescopes, scales and vices and pestle and mortars and bellows and lots and lots of papers, too. All his papers, many were published after his death. Two volumes of diaries. He's the only scientist in England who kept a diary at this time. Again, he's less famous than the great diarist of the age, Samuel Pepys. About 3,000 books. Like me, he was a great buyer of books and haunter of bookshops. And what surprised everyone was he was very rich. He lived a sort of scruffy and poor life. As he got older, especially, he was an old man and very ill. But he had left about £8,000 in a big trunk, and £8,000 would be about £1 million today, I think.
You also note that in death as in life, Robert Hooke was an unattractive sight.
Yes, more unattractive in death, as most of us are. But yes, he was, he had a deformed back and a rather strange face, and he never married or even he never had any relationship with anyone who wasn't dependent on him, servants and people like that. And I think he was physically unattractive, but in his personality, many people thought he was a delightful man, though others have said that he was a miser and over-argumentative and so on.
Mm. What was his most important influence on science? Certainly the relationship with Isaac Newton has to leap out.
Yes, his relationship with Newton is really important and in a way helped to destroy his reputation. But he was really a professional experimental scientist. He worked for the Royal Society, which was this new organization in 1660, and he really kept it going, giving them experiments and demonstrations week after week, dozens and dozens of them. And the idea was that many of these amateur scientists they collected information and they collected oddities, and other people like Descartes theorized. And what Hooke did was to bring theory and observation together, especially through experimentation. He tried to test whether theories were true or not by experiment and observation. That's his special general contribution. But then he's so versatile. He covers almost every area of science. Maybe that's why people can't really get a grip on him. He demonstrated that there was something in air that made it possible for things to burn, and to show that just a proportion of air was that thing. He didn't call it oxygen, but that's what he meant. He showed that we needed air when we breathed, and it changed the color of the blood. He did that by cutting dogs open, which he didn't like to do. He gave a mechanical explanation of the orbit of one body like the Earth around another like the Sun, that orbits were the mechanical compound of two motions, a straight motion past the Sun, and the attractive power of the Sun, which drew the Earth towards it, and that made an orbit. And nobody said that before him. And when he wrote a letter to Newton in 1679 telling him of that idea, Newton had never heard of it before. Hmm. And he was amazed by it, and it stimulated him to do his work. And he was irritated by it, too, because he didn't like to be told things. And Hooke is like the grit in Newton's oyster. Newton had all sorts of other ideas, like on astrology and things like that, but Hooke made him work on gravitation and orbits, and so he has a sort of hidden importance there that is forgotten but is really important, I think. He was a great astronomer. He explained the craters on the moon, and he observed the rotation of Jupiter and Mars and helped establish what their rotational time was. He's, I suppose, one of the greatest English inventors, especially an inventor of scientific instruments. That is, this world, the 17th century world, they're beginning to see you need to observe things and measure them accurately. And he was terribly important in making scientific instruments, like, for instance, a vacuum pump, an air pump. You couldn't observe what happened in a vacuum, though you could imagine it, if you couldn't make a vacuum. And Hooke's the first person to make a vacuum which you could put a flame in.
We're speaking with Stephen Inwood. His new book is The Forgotten Genius, the biography of Robert Hooke, 1635-1703. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we have an email we got from Andy Lenouet, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, in Starnesville, Wisconsin. Anybody who's ever taken high school physics has studied Hooke, or at least Hooke's law, F equals KX. The force required to displace a spring is proportional to the displacement and constant dependent of the properties of the spring. I can tell I never studied physics. This law is used to design everything from pogo sticks to car suspensions. The spring was a lot of his contribution.
Yeah, that's the one thing people remember about Hooke. When I told people I'm working on Hooke, they say, ah, Hooke's law. That's almost all people remember, and that is one of his most important contributions, but one of about 30.
Let's get another caller on the line. Ken is with us from Salt Lake City.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Was wondering if there was some connection between Robert Hooke and Isaac Newton's famous quote, if I've seen further, it's because I stand on the shoulder of giants. My understanding is that Hooke was a rather diminutive man, and Isaac Newton did not like Hooke much at all, and he actually intended this as kind of a swipe at Hooke.
Yeah, well, he wrote it to Hooke. It was after they'd had a dispute over the nature of color and white light, and it was his way of trying to settle that dispute. And it was quite a familiar sort of... It wasn't the first time anyone said that, you know. It's sometimes said, those people who think that Newton tried to destroy Hooke put that interpretation on that letter. There isn't any way of knowing that that's what Newton meant by it, and I don't think Newton was really given to jokes. I think he meant it fairly straight, okay. That he was just acknowledging that his work was, he was saying, of course, his work was superior to Hooke's, but it was based upon Hooke's. He may have been making a joke. I don't think Hooke or Newton took it that way.
If it was, it's the first joke anybody's ever accused him of making. But Ken, thanks very much.
Forward to reading the book.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Let's get another caller on the line. Bridget. Bridget's with us from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hello. I just wanted to remind everybody that also Robert Hooke's important for polishing of lenses and one of the first microscopes, even before Antoine van Leeuwenhoek.
Absolutely. Leeuwenhoek was inspired by Hooke. Leeuwenhoek is a greater, I mean, in lots of ways, Hooke is a sort of silver medalist, you know. Leeuwenhoek is the greater user of the microscope, but he did it, first of all, because of Hooke. He read, I think, Hooke's Micrographia, and Hooke is the first great user of the microscope and maker of microscopes, too, but he also had contacts with all the different craftsmen in London who could do this sort of work for him, you know.
Well, Bridget, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And we just have a few seconds left, and this gives some idea of the complexity of Robert Hooke's life. One of his greatest contributions, of course, was his work with Sir Christopher Wren, the great architect, of course, the reconstruction of London after the Great Fire, and the design of churches which exist to this day, and I'm afraid we're not going to have time to talk about it.
Oh, I'm sorry. He had two careers both at the same time, in science and in city building.
Well, clearly, Robert Hooke, one of the great polymaths of all time, Stephen Inwood, has written a new biography of him called The Forgotten Genius, a biography of Robert Hooke. One of the interesting points he makes is that as Robert Hooke lay dying in his last years at that rooms that he was talking about, one of the things he was obsessed about was the fear that his scientific work would be forgotten. Stephen Inwood joined us on the phone from Richmond, near London, England. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.